You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Good evening, everybody. This is Commander Tom Garcia. Welcome to the American Hour. We've got a great guest lined up for tonight. We'll get to our guest in just a moment. But, of course, joining me from Boston, Massachusetts, our lovely co-host, Paula Lazan. How are you doing tonight, Paula?
Doing excellent, Tom. It's 43 up here in the greater Boston area. And a quick reminder to our listeners that the GOP 2012 presidential election debate is on this evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Fox News. They're going to be broadcasting live from the Sioux City Convention Center in Sioux City, Iowa. And the participants will be Michelle Bachmann, Newt Gingrich, John Huntsman, Ron Paul, Rick Perry, Mitt Romney, and Rick Santorum.
Awesome. Yeah, we may actually watch this one. This could be a good one. You have any predictions for tonight, Paula?
I'm seeing Gingrich still in the lead with Romney, you know, slowly trailing behind. I wish somebody would come from the bottom and just, you know, make their shining moment come through, but I haven't seen it yet. I still see Gingrich as the one that's going to continue to you know, trudge ahead.
I see Gingrich as another John McCain. That's just me personally. I hope either Rick Santorum or Michelle Bachmann comes in the top three in the Iowa caucus. We'll see what happens. But I got a lot of folks in Central Florida that are pulling for Rick Santorum, and I like Rick a lot as well. And we could use another young guy in the presidency, I think, and especially with his viewpoints on a lot of things. And I've been reading up on him and trying to find out more about him. But anyways, we'll see what happens tonight. They're going to try and make their stand tonight before the Christmas holidays so that people will have something to talk about, you know, with their family and friends over the holidays. But in any case, before we get on to the main part of our show here, I just want to let people know, stick around to the end because we're going to be doing our next installment of a tribute to liberal false choices. And tonight's false choice is courtesy of my U.S. Senator, Marco Rubio. So you don't want to miss that. Tribute to liberal false choices. We will have the conservative false choice tonight, provided by me. And also, we can't play a clip of Debbie What's-Her-Next-Lie Schultz. My ears are bleeding right now because I listened to it and took down notes. But I am going to tell you so that you, the listening public and our listenership, don't have to listen to it and bleed your ears out. But I'm going to tell you what her most recent lie is at the end of this show. You don't want to miss that because it has to do with unemployment. And if you haven't seen it, anyway. All right, well, we've got a great guest on tonight, Steve Barris, who is Deputy Chief of Police in Daytona. He is running for Volusia County Sheriff, and we came very close to moving up to Volusia County here. When was it? Probably several months ago, and then my flying job at American Airlines changed such that my schedule requires me to be within a couple hours of the airport. So, I haven't had to do that in many, many years. So we're kind of stuck down here in South Florida. But love Volusia County. Love it. What a great county. One of the best counties in the whole state. In any case, Steve Barris, thanks for joining us tonight.
Hey, it's great to be here. Thank you.
Now, I'm going to run down a list of your experience. You've been in the Daytona Beach Police Department since 85. And I'm just looking real quickly at your little resume, not a very extensive resume, but patrol, obviously, special ops, Criminal Investigations Unit, the Office of Special Investigations, SWAT Commander, Dignitary, Protection Team Leader, that must have been a fun one, Administrative Services Deputy Commander, Criminal Investigations Deputy Commander, and Training Division Supervisor. And I know from my military background, being involved in training can be a lot of fun, and it gives you a lot of ability to sort of mold the future of some of your younger folks and even change the perception of some of your older folks. So look like a great resume there. And I want to tell people how they can find out more about you, BerresForSheriff2012.com. And, of course, your last name is spelled B-E-R-E-S. Then it's F-O-R, Sheriff. And people don't misspell Sheriff. It's S-H-E-R-I-F-F, not two R's. BerresForSheriff2012.com. And I believe I put a link on our website that will take people right there. But so with that kind of a background, it sounds like you're a shoe-in for the sheriff of Volusia County. But tell us, number one, why you decided to run for sheriff, because running for any office is a tough thing. It really is. I've done it. It takes a toll on the family, and personally, I've got way more gray hair now than I used to have. But also, why you think you are the best candidate, and we'll let you take it away.
Well, I got to tell you, first off, the family issue itself, my wife and I have talked about this ad nauseum for the last year and a half. My kids, I've talked to them about it, and I'm getting a lot of support from the family, which is great, and that was my main concern. Because I told them, I said, listen, there's going to be a lot of times where I'm going to have to go to a meeting, or I'm going to have to go here or there. And I think it really, really hit home when I became deputy chief, because I was going to anywhere between 10 to 12 meetings a week as far as community watch meetings and city hall meetings. So it kind of set the groundwork for them. Family for me is number one. I love my family. I've got two boys. I've got my little girl, Katie, who's 12. My oldest son is actually a law enforcement officer and a police officer with us at Daytona Beach.
Awesome.
And my other son just signed up to go to the police academy, and he starts in March, and he'll be 21 in March. So the law enforcement aspect of it, both boys, myself, my dad was in law enforcement. My dad was actually, before he passed away, worked for Railway State Prison in New Jersey. He was in their Central Transportation Division. So I'm not a stranger to law enforcement by any stretch of imagination. And I think, dedicating myself to this profession for the last 26 years, and I worked in Daytona Beach exclusively. This is where I started. This is where I'm going to end my Daytona Beach career here in the city. I'm ready to take that next step. Dedicate that commitment, that career to protecting and serving everybody in Volusia County, not just the citizens of Daytona Beach. But I think one of the biggest things that I want to do, and the reason why I'm doing it, I've got a vested interest because of my daughter Katie. You see so many things going wrong in schools, so many things going wrong in different areas. I want to make sure this county is safe. I want to make sure that the citizens get the best protection, the best deputies, and the best leader that they possibly can get. That's me. I'm a cop. I want to make sure that the people know that, and I also want to make sure that they can count on me when it comes to those tough decisions that you have to make as a leader.
Well, let me ask you this. Now, what is the relationship with the Sheriff's Department and the Daytona Beach Police?
Well, we've got a good working relationship as far as the deputies and the officers on the road. Obviously, the chief and the sheriff, there's different viewpoints. I can't speak for the chief, but he's a cop's cop, and our main focus, and I think any main focus in any law enforcement agency, should be the community first. But personalities aside, let's get the job done. Let's make sure everybody's safe, and let's keep everybody moving.
Okay. Right. Just for my own edification, is the current sheriff of Volusia County running for re-election?
Well, he says he's running. He hasn't made that announcement yet. I think that he said he was going to make it sometime around mid-January or early January, but he hasn't done that yet. I'm anticipating that he's going to run for re-election. I wouldn't see why he wouldn't. But I'm up for a challenge, and
okay.
I'm always there to move on up, and that's what I plan on doing.
Now, are there other folks in the other candidates in the race besides you and, of course, the incumbent? How many are in the race for Volusia County Sheriff?
Well, right now the two that have made it official are myself and a deputy from Seminole County who lives in DeLand. So theoretically, right now there's two of us. I would say by the time qualifying comes in June, there'll be the three of us.
Okay, that's not too bad. Yeah.
No.
Well, we'll have to talk about my own experience. I don't know if you've ever run for office before, but I learned a few things that I think might be able to help you out reaching the masses. Because, you know, quite honestly, people, when it comes down to almost any race below the president, most people, the masses, just don't really do any research. And so there are some tricks and some things that can get their attention. And when I say tricks, I mean, you're not tricking anybody, but it's things that you need to know. So we should have a little discussion. It'll only take me about 10 minutes to tell you some things that I learned the hard way in my own race, but that can really actually make a difference. So, but that's great. And the reason I say this is because you were essentially vetted by my scheduler, Dick Birnbach, who I'm surprised didn't call in tonight. I know he's got a whole new project he's working on, which is uniting patriot groups across the country. So
right.
That's probably swamping him right now. But I think he spent about an hour and a half with you, and he called me up and he said, "Tom, this guy's great. You got to get him on the show, and we got to help this guy out because I'm really impressed." So from a 30-year cop veteran, worked I think the end of his career with the FBI, almost strictly with the FBI.
Yes, he did.
He's a guy that I take his word on anything, absolutely. So Dick Birnbach, he had rave reviews about you, and so we're glad to have you on the show. Now, aside from politics, one of the things that I've been talking to people about the show is that there are probably some things that the average citizen out there doesn't know about law enforcement, some of the advances in technology and techniques as well. If you would, are there some things that you would estimate, and I'm an airline pilot, I can tell you all day long about things that the average person wouldn't know that they would actually find interesting, technology-wise and the way we fly our airplanes. That's not the show tonight. The show tonight's about law enforcement. What would you tell people out there that is interesting or that they just simply wouldn't know about that is really helping law enforcement in these modern times?
Well, I got to tell you, the one thing, believe it or not, that helped me in my career as a SWAT commander and on the SWAT team, I started out from New Jersey at 18 years old of age. I came down here to Florida and I went to Embry-Riddle. So I received my pilot certificate. My private pilot went through some training for the instrument and commercial, took a summer off, and then I became a cop.
Uh-huh.
So the flight training, I have to tell you, really helped because, you know, you don't have time to really think, you just do.
You got to be, exactly, it's got to be, you got to just practice until it's just a part of, it's natural for you to do the job. But that's interesting. Right. Embry-Riddle, wow, okay, cool.
Yeah, 2.5 years. The only difference in law enforcement is if you do the same thing over and over and over, you get complacent and you get stale, and that's when things start to go wrong, and that's when crime actually starts to go up. So what we've done over the last several years is we're always moving forward. We're always predicting where crime is going to take place. We use a model called ComStat, and I don't know if a lot of people are familiar with that. But basically, ComStat is computerized statistics. And instead of, having the officer just respond to a burglary, take a report, file that report away, and then next day take the report, file it away, what we do is we map all these problem areas. So we know where to put the resources. We just don't sit back, wait, and watch. The interesting part about that is when we do map all these problem areas out, we know times, we have trends, and this way we don't waste our resources. That's one of the things that over the last 15 or 20 years has really changed. Law enforcement has become very, very proactive. With those proactive activities, the technology part of it has really advanced. The old CSI on TV, you're not going to get DNA in 45 minutes. It's usually anywhere between 3 and 4 days at the most, or at the least, rather.
Yeah.
But it's out there.
Yeah, that's awesome.
You know, we're, we got DNA off of a rock and caught a serial burglar.
Wow.
So, I mean, that's some of the stuff that you would never have thought about 15 or 20 years ago.
Right, yeah. Technology's made some great advances. What were you really talking about is a form of risk management, which I'm intimately familiar with and actually used to have a consulting business doing risk management for a variety of industries. And you can use risk management in a couple ways, but you used a great term, proactive. If you use it to prepare for, you can't always predict everything, but if you use it as a predictive model and a way to ensure that you're preparing for the highest risk situations and the most common risk situations, that is absolutely proactive. So that's very cool. All right.
Exactly. Excellent. One of the things that I did when I was in the training division, you know, we train with our firearms constantly, and you do have to be precise and you have to be very, very proficient. But our number of police shootings were very low, which was great. But the number of our backing up accidents in patrol cars was at a higher level. So I said, you know, this is simple. Let's practice backing up. And then after we had all of our officers go through our training in driving to do a little bit more advanced training in driving, our accidents went down. And so you're exactly right. You have to be predictive, and you have to know where to put your resources and put all your money. And that's today's law enforcement. And if you don't have that type of an attitude, you're just going to fail. I'm just going to fail, and I'm not a failure.
Yeah.
I don't like failure.
Well, now Daytona Beach has got to probably be the most populated, most visited, most active area of Volusia County. Am I right about that?
Yes, we've got the Speedway. We've got two major bike events every year: Bike Week in March and Biketoberfest in October. We also have one of the largest car shows in November that's on the East Coast. It's called the Turkey Rod Run. And we have car enthusiasts from all over the country come down for the Thanksgiving weekend. We have Daytona Beach is about 64 square miles, daily population of about 125,000. Oddly enough, we only have 238 officers, full-time officers. Now, when
wow.
you consider 500,000 people per day for Bike Week, the Daytona International Speedway for the Daytona 500, one of the largest races in the world, that has over 250,000, you know, that says a lot. You really have to take your resources and you have to put them in the right places. And
yeah. Now,
that's what we're good at.
Do you have a motorcycle police force?
Yes, we do. We've got 13 full-time motorcycle officers, and then we have six part-time motorcycle officers that work for the Speedway during the Speedway events. So, yeah, our motorcycle people really work hard. I ran the motorcycle unit in Special Ops for 2.5 years, in the rain, in the cold, in the heat. I mean, it really gets the toll on you, and you really have to enjoy what you're doing to work on that bike.
Yeah. Well, now, I've been in Daytona during a bike week and some of the other events, and the traffic can just be horrendous. And I would think that the only way, your unit could respond to things as rapidly as possible would be to have bikes that can, you know, get through traffic and get to where they need to go quickly. Other than driving a car on some of those days through there is... Boy, I don't even know how to describe it, but it's tough.
Well, you know, we've got more pedal bicycles than we do motorcycles. When Chief Chitwood came in, he's an avid biker. I mean, you'll hell 30, 40 miles a day, no problem. So when he came on board and he became the chief, we started buying bicycles, and we put a lot of people on bicycles throughout the day. They're cost-effective, first off.
Yeah,
They're stealth. And you can get pretty much anywhere with them. The command staff, myself, the chief, Deputy Chief Ben Walton, every Friday we try to go out in the community on bikes. So we'll ride, 25, 30 miles throughout the city, throughout the community, just to show people that we're out there, just to show that leadership. I hate sitting behind a desk.
Yeah,
I mean, there is time for administration stuff, but as far as you can't lead from behind the desk. You have to be out there with your people, and that's something that we do.
Yeah, I can sympathize with that. That's why I became a pilot. I had an engineering degree, but the very first time I visited a architecture firm and saw the cubicles and how claustrophobic it looked and everything, I was glad that I had chosen to be a pilot, except now, you know, I love being an airline pilot. I don't want anybody to take this wrong. But I sit for hours and hours in a seat where flight attendants are handing me really bad-for-you food and I'd love to get on a bicycle and bike around town. That'd be a great job. Oh my gosh, that'd be fun. Get to talk with people and everything. I mean, and then I'm sort of now after 9/11, I'm sort of kind of quarantined up there in the cockpit. And so I talk to passengers when they come on a little bit and when they get off, but you don't get all that interaction. So that sounds like a very fun job. And I imagine that you probably have folks going out to schools and talking with the kids on a regular basis about not just community issues, but also probably, a career in law enforcement.
Oh, definitely. Our recruiting people, we go out to colleges, we go out to high schools. I'm part of an advisory board for Atlantic High School to where we actually go out there and speak to the kids about, you know, a career in law enforcement and criminal justice. We do a thing where we walk kids to school. We'll go to a bus stop, and we'll actually walk these kids to school. Get up at 7, you know, get there at 7 o'clock in the morning, and you know, it has a real good impact when a 5 or 6 year old kid sees a police officer, and it's not in a negative way. It's like, hey, this guy really cares about me. Or we'll sit down and we'll read to him. For me, the juvenile issue, you have to take care of these kids, and you can't give up on them. You know, even if you just save one kid out of 10, you're doing your job. We're very, very, very proactive when it comes to juveniles and when it comes to different kids that are in trouble. Not just in trouble, but we're doing a thing on Saturday where we take 12 kids, we adopt 12 families, and we take these families shopping. We have a good relationship with Walmart and Target and some of the bigger department stores. And we go to the store with these kids and we take care of Christmas for them. And, it's real heartwarming when you see some kids that don't have a whole lot. I took my wife and daughter last year, and the family that I adopted, the mother died several years ago when the kid was 2 or 3. His father was in a nursing home, and he was being raised by his grandparents who both had cancer. So this is an 11-year-old kid going through this.
Wow.
So when we went to the store, you know, most people think about Christmas and kids, you know, fire trucks and police cars and airplanes and all these other toys. All this kid wanted was socks, shoes, shirts, I mean, the necessities that he needed. So, you know, that's the kind of stuff that these kids really need to see, you know, what the police officer can do for you to help you grow up.
Well, speaking of that, because it is the holidays, if people want to donate sort of like Toys for Tots, you know, the Marines do that and various military organizations, VFW, and I know even the Volusia, let's make sure I get it right, there in New Smyrna Beach, I've been there so many times, the the East Volusia Republican Club. They collect toys and pass them out to kids and do the same thing. But if somebody wants to get involved, say, through the Daytona Police Department, can they just go into any police department building and drop off some toys?
Yeah, they can come to our main building, which is at 129 Valor Boulevard. It's right at the intersection of Mason Avenue and Williamson. And we have a box out there we call for our 100 Wishes program. And that's what we'll be doing next week. We'll be getting all these toys, sorting them out. And we've identified, it started out as 100 different kids. And I believe right now it's well over 150 kids. And that's exactly what we do. We try to make their Christmas a little more enjoyable and something that they could actually remember as far as a positive and whatever donations we get goes right to them. We had a an anonymous person come in with 10 or 15 toys. You know, I don't want any recognition, just make sure the kids get this. And it's really heartwarming when you see these the expression on these kids' faces. You know, it gives you a real different perspective as far as, you know, the rough and tough SWAT guy. You know, here you got this kid that's hugging onto your leg just because you gave him a Lego set. So I mean, it's really neat. It's really neat to see.
Yeah. Okay. Well, if you've just joined us, we're talking with Steve Barris. He's running for Volusia County Sheriff. You can go to his website, barrisforsheriff2012.com. And I believe you've got both a Facebook and Twitter account. What are those where people can follow you on Twitter and see what's going on Facebook?
Yeah, if you go to my website, there's a link that makes it real easy for you to go to my Twitter page and my Facebook page. So all you have to do is go to the Barris for Sheriff website, click on the Facebook, and it'll take you right there.
Yeah, and I'm there right now. Facebook, it's Steve Barris for Sheriff 2012 on Facebook, and on Twitter, it's Barris for Sheriff. So that would be the at symbol. But if you just search in Twitter, you'll find it. And so I ask people this all the time. We have guests on here that have, you know, tens of thousands of people following them on Twitter and Facebook, and I ask them, so how much time do you spend on a day or weekly basis posting stuff on Twitter and Facebook, and are you doing it, or do you have somebody that's assigned to do it for you?
No, I do it all myself. I have to be honest with you, I was a little lax the last 2 weeks because our computer crashed. So I tell you, you become so so needy on these things. So we bought a new computer and we're back up on it. But I like to read all my own emails. I like to send all my own tweets and Facebook posts and the whole bit. It's just because, you know, it's me running for sheriff. I know I need help. I know I need a lot of support. But when it comes down to somebody asking a question, I want to be the one that answers it, because I don't want to be any miscommunication. I don't want there to be any issues as far as, well, this is what you said on your Facebook post. Well, I can't come out and say, well, somebody else wrote it for me. No, I want to be able to do that. You know, as far as time goes, I put in just about 50 to 60 hours at the PD right now, doing my normal job, and then another probably 4 or 5 hours at night doing campaign stuff, you know, and a lot of people say, oh, it's a lot of work. I got to tell you, and maybe it just hasn't hit me yet, but I am truly enjoying this. I mean, I love going to different meetings and talking with folks and getting their ideas, and it's like, you know, hey, you got a good idea. Get me an office, and I'll run with it. This is perfect. And that's what's great about this, just meeting people out there and talking with them and getting new ideas. I mean, that's what it's all about.
That is the fun part of it. What I didn't like about campaigning was raising money. So I'm going to put this out there to folks. Number one, on your site, you can volunteer. Elect Steve Barris for Volusia County Sheriff. There's a volunteer button there. There are all kinds of things people can do. Sometimes people are afraid to volunteer. I'm telling you right now, it's easy to volunteer. There are so many easy things that you can do that you can just sit at home and do. And it's not making phone calls. People are afraid of making phone calls. But phone calls actually are quite easy to do. But anyway, but also contribute. I mean, these races, every race there is costs money to purchase signs and put them out there. And, you know, we don't want rich guys going out and running for office. And, of course, when it comes to sheriff and those kind of jobs, we're talking about somebody that's a law enforcement officer. They're not rich. They might be doing okay, but they're not rich. They can't fund their own campaign. They need help. And just $5 helps. So I'll put that out there for you, because I've been through this. Every little bit helps.
Yeah, I'm gonna task my my Facebook friends, all of my likes, and I'm going to try a little approach and see how well it works. For everybody that puts a like on my Facebook page, I want to ask them if they can generate $100. So if that means going out to 10 people and have them contribute 10 or 100 people just for a dollar, I want to see how well that works. And I think that just from talking with people, it's still early. You know, it's the holidays. I can't expect people to, you know, to give Steve Barris $10, $100, $500 when they're buying Christmas presents and everything else. But after the holidays, that's when we're really going to kick in our fundraising efforts and really get rolling, really moving
fast.
Yeah,
that's important to a campaign. I mean, you got to have money. It's unfortunate that it works that way, but it does in today's campaigning and media needs, et cetera. So, yeah, folks, if you like what you're seeing and hearing, you definitely got to check out BarrisForSheriff2012.com and find out more about Steve and why you should vote for him, but not just vote, but get involved. Get involved in a campaign. And so there are lots of campaigns going on. I mean, you know, everybody's running for office. We got a big election coming up in 2012. But if you want to make a difference in your own community, take a look at who your state representatives are, who's running for sheriff, who's running for county city positions, and get involved. Pick one campaign, because you can't get involved in all of them. Pick a campaign and get in there and help out. Now, I'll defer to Paula here in a moment, so I'll give her a couple seconds to gather her thoughts on any questions that she may have. But back to the sort of the political side of things, nobody likes change. We all talk about we like change, but in reality, you know, you going into the Volusia County Sheriff's Department and saying, okay, we're doing this over, we're changing that. I mean, nobody likes that, and especially the folks that are there working.
Right.
But is there anything that you see as sort of a bit of an outsider, because you're not in the Sheriff's Department, but obviously, you know, well-qualified in law enforcement, is there anything you see that you'd like to see done at the county level as the sheriff, the head guy at the Sheriff's Department, that you would like to move forward with, build upon? And I don't want to use the word change because that scares people, but, you know, is there anything that stands out that you've seen over the years that you think you can make a difference for the county?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. One of the first things is you really need to address budget issues, and I think that's going to be one of the top priorities. Unfortunately, when I take office in January, the budget's already set for that year, so I'm kind of stuck with that budget. There's a lot of well-qualified people, I'm sure, at the sheriff's office that will assist in that. But overtime, you know, there's different ways to cut overtime spending. You know, having four or five boats is great, but do you need four or five boats? Do you really need to invest in another one? So, I mean, those are some of the things that I really have to take a look at. You know, when you take over an organization, you do have to make some changes. That's a gimme. But you really need to sit back and just look at that organization first, see how it's being run. And if it's running effectively, efficiently, and within those budgetary parameters, you know, then that's okay. I have no problem with saying no to some certain things, and I have no problem saying, hey, listen, we're going to change some things, you know, personnel-wise. You know, do we need certain people in certain places? So, I mean, those are some of the tough decisions that, you know, sometimes people don't exactly agree with. You know, I've been through change agents with the police department for 26 years, you know, and if you give these changes a chance, you're going to see some results. One of the other changes that I see is the way that resources are deployed. Here again, our CompStat model is great. The Police Executive Research Forum, PERF, did a study on different agencies that utilize CompStat as a crime reduction model. And when these people from PERF came down, I got to talking with them, and one of the things that they thought was very interesting that I would like to try is a regionalization CompStat. Take that from beyond the cities, countywide. So in other words, all 18 cities, all 19 cities within Volusia County, have that sheriff's office work with those cities to fight crime. Find out where the trends are. And then maybe we could assist the smaller cities with crime reduction, assist some of the bigger cities with crime reduction. The main thing is to make this county the safest county possible. That's it for the citizens, for the visitors. Because if you get robbed in Volusia County or Daytona Beach, you're not going to want to come back. So, I mean, that's part of the whole budget cycle. If it's not safe, people aren't going to go. So those are just two of the things that that I really want to set my sights on.
Now, one of the things I want to, you know, let people know about, because some people may say, well, hey, you know, yeah, you're in law enforcement, but, you know, what do you know about the sheriff's department? You never served in the sheriff's department. One of the things that we did in the military was you were always changing jobs, not only within, like, my squadron. I was constantly changing jobs within the squadron, but then I would only stay there 2.5-3 years and move on to the next squadron. You're constantly changing jobs. And you pointed something out very, very important in the beginning, where you said that, you know, if you're just constantly doing the same thing, you're going backwards. And so for these kinds of jobs, critical safety, security type jobs in various your industry and military and other industries, it is important to really kind of be constantly changing jobs so that you don't run into that stagnation. And so I think that's great. So I would tell people, and as a risk management consultant for many years, having somebody come into the sheriff's department who has not been a sheriff is actually a huge plus, because you're going to come walking in there with a whole different perspective and coming from a different culture to some degree, yet you fully understand law enforcement, and that's the big plus. And so that could be a huge plus for the sheriff's department, and one reason to elect you, simply because you haven't been in that culture all these years. But now, with that all said, what do you perceive? You certainly must have friends in the sheriff department. How are you perceived as somewhat of an outsider coming into the sheriff's department by that very department?
Well, you know, I do have a lot of friends that work at the sheriff's office. Some are that have been there for a long time, and I've got a lot of support from a lot of people there. And I have to tell you that a lot of the deputies are ready for a change just because of that reason. You know, we've done the same thing over and over and over, and we need somebody with some fresh ideas and some new thoughts and some new initiatives to take this to the next level. You know, law enforcement, like you said, is law enforcement, but you have to remember something with the sheriff's department from years ago. They mainly patrolled a lot of the rural areas. Well, those rural areas are slowly starting to shrink into cities. More cities are starting to consolidate properties, so larger cities are starting to be formed in Volusia County. DeLand is a prime example. DeBary is a prime example, and Deltona. You know, now we have the sheriff's department, who mainly started 20, 25 years ago as a civil entity, now are having to be tasked with crime reduction. Well, this is what I did my entire life, crime reduction. So I think some of the expertise that I have, some of the ideas that I have, I could definitely transfer over to that department, that agency, so that the cities that contract with Volusia County Sheriff's Office get the best service possible. And that's what we're hoping to accomplish.
Well, I don't want to sound like I'm just totally on the bandwagon with you, but I like everything you've said so far. And,
well, thank you.
Absolutely. I just from an outsider's, you know, who spent a lot of years working on risk management, this is very beneficial to an organization to have an outsider / insider. You're an insider in the, you know, you've been in law enforcement your whole career, but you're an outsider because you're not a part of that unit. And that is a huge plus in the risk management business in terms of improving the operational excellence. And we had a term in the Navy that we adopted quite a few years ago called operational excellence. And a simple definition of that is continually redefining excellence so that you're constantly raising the bar, constantly moving forward. So to operate at that superior level of excellence, you've got to be constantly redefining what excellence actually is. And it really helps have set eyes. I mean, there were programs that I ran in the Navy, and when I turned them over to somebody, I thought, there's no way you can make this better. And lo and behold, a year later, I'd look and see what they were doing with it. And because they were just a fresh set of eyes and had a new perspective, they had made a program that I started better. And that's
exactly
just the way it is. And it's a little bit of an ego bruise, but that's just the way it works. So in any case, I think you might be a very, very good fit for the sheriff's department. Now, Let me turn it over to Paula. Paula, you've got to have some questions for Steve here.
Oh,
hi, Paula.
I do. Hi, Steve. Nice to meet you. You discussed, certain things that you would do within the department if you were elected sheriff. With the budgetary, I'm not sure if there are actual budgetary constraints within the department, but I did notice on the website that there is, a handful of still unsolved murders and cold cases from as back as 1990 to the early to mid-2000s. Is that something that you would, put some effort into in helping these families gain closure, if you were elected into the position?
Definitely. And I believe I've spent a lot of time in investigations, not only as a detective, but as a supervisor. And one of the hardest parts of being an investigator is to not solve a case. You become personally involved with these families. You really become a part of them. I spoke to a family, Linda Little, who is one of our missing persons from 10 years ago. She, we spoke to the family, and we constantly update our files as far as going out there, and some subtle differences that you might see today didn't exist 20 years ago, 15 years ago. One of the things in this particular case, all we had at the original time was a name. Well, and it happened to be Tom. Tom, we couldn't find at the time because technology and the different databases weren't there. Well, we were able to narrow this guy's first name down to a last name, which now one of our guys might be a witness, is living in Deltona. So, we're able to get these witnesses, the DNA evidence. So, yeah, closure to these families is something that I think is very important. I know the Volusia County Sheriff's Office does have a cold case squad. I don't know how much time and effort they put into it. But, yeah, clearances is very important, and that's something that I would really like to keep going, just like with the different task forces that we have in effect between the FBI and Homeland Security, the DEA, ATF. All those task forces are extensions of that organization. I mean, the information that's out there is just unbelievable. So, yeah, without those different entities out there, we can't do our job, or we can't do it as effectively as we like to.
And because you have a vested interest on the other matter, because of your daughter and, ensuring child safety, teen safety, and the safety of the battered and abused women as well as the children, do you think that the taxes would need to be raised? Do you feel that the citizens in that county are concerned about whether the next individual that comes in is going to go, well, we're either going to, lay people off or we're going to raise taxes? What's your take on that?
I don't think that we're at the point right now. If you effectively work on your budget and you effectively manage that budget, I don't think that we're going to be at that point in Volusia County where people are going to have to start to be laid off. You could move people around, and that's where I said earlier about, it's nice to have, four or five boats, but do you really need that? Well, that's one of the things that we're going to have to really strongly look at, where that money is coming from and where it's going and how effectively we can use it. I don't want to see any police officer laid off. I don't want to see anybody lose any jobs. But the safety of the citizens come first, and I think anything that you can do to manage those officers and keep those deputies where they need to be, that's my main priority. And that should be the priority of any agency, whether it's a chief of police or a sheriff.
Now, do you oversee the jail in the county or the particular prison system? You'll have to excuse me because I'm from the Boston area, and I don't know how they do it down in your area. The sheriff oversees the Department of Correction or whatnot.
No, the Department of Corrections is under the Public Protection Branch of Volusia County, which has its own entity. So the sheriff Now, Flagler County, our county to the north, they have the jail. They have the county jail, but Volusia County doesn't have it. I look at it this way. If it's going to save money, and if there's any programs that the county council wants to dump on me as sheriff, I'd be more than happy to take it.
Right. I guess what my thought process would be is, as sheriff, if you were the type of in that capacity to overlook the Department of Corrections, you know, how do you introduce, I guess, how would you introduce, you know, people that have committed crimes back into society?
I know what you mean about bringing them back in. And I think that if somebody is incarcerated and we just take that person and we just dump them back into society, we're not doing ourselves a justice or that person any justice. I think that there has to be programs within the jail setting, within the correction setting, that helps that person to get back to be an effective member of society. My dad, like I said earlier, was in corrections. And in my office, there's a plaque that the lifers made him when he passed away. Because even though these people weren't getting out of jail, they were going to die in jail, he treated them fairly. And that's something that I would truly believe in. And I'm hoping that our criminal justice, our corrections section, has that same mindset. I don't know. I never worked in corrections, but if it ever came down to it, where I would have to take, I'm a fast learner. There would be no problem with me trying to get in there.
Well, Paula, I was going to say, give them a one-way bus ticket to Orange County.
I don't know if Sheriff Deming would like that one or not.
Yeah, I know.
My goodness, not
a good idea. Okay, well, that goes. Goes to show why I'm not in law enforcement. But,
thinking out of the box.
Yeah, just ship it over to the next county. I'm sure that happens all the time in counties around the country. It's like, here's your ticket to the next state or whatever. Go become somebody else's problem. But,
Well, you know, we actually had a program like that, which was a little bit different. We worked with the Urban Ministries of Volusia County. And if you were constantly getting in trouble and if you were constantly one of our homeless people, and you had a relative, let's just say in Boston, we would make contact with that relative in Boston and say, hey, listen, I got this guy Steve in Daytona Beach. You know, he's got no job. He's no family here. Would you be willing to help him out and get him on his feet? And Urban Ministries would actually give this guy a bus ticket to help him get back up there. So, I mean,
yeah, so that. There, Paula, now you know where all the homeless people are coming from Volusia County.
You know, that's a shame. It really is. That breaks my heart. But
you know, we have a lot of homeless people. There's a lot of veterans that are homeless. We do a lot of different things to help them out, to try to get them the help that they need. Because that's it. If they don't have the help that they need, you know, they don't know where to get it. They're not going to get it.
Right.
Well, you know, the National Veterans Homeless Support Group is headquartered right down in Titusville, and
right.
I don't know if their reach has come up into Volusia County at this point and how, but those guys are great, and they know all the ways to help out the homeless vets particularly. I mean, that's what they're working on, the homeless vets, and they do a fantastic job. And they were going to get funding, but it got line item vetoed by Governor Scott. They were going to get $1 million to take what they've done over the years in Brevard County in Central Florida and spread that throughout the entire state. Now, I haven't checked with them lately, but they thought they had maybe another funding organization. But now along those lines, we were at the park the other day, and this is in Palm Beach County. Mm-hmm. And I turned around, and we were sitting in the park, and there was up on the hill a men's and ladies' room up there for the park. And I saw some workers in what looked like prison garb that were there doing, I don't know what, you know, you call maintaining the trees and shrubs and things like that, and that kind of a thing. Are there programs in Volusia County that for some of the, you know, non-violent criminal offenders that get them out and get them productive in society while they're still serving their terms?
Yeah, we do have that. We actually utilize, or I say we, the city utilizes some of the offenders from Volusia County Corrections to do some just that, taking care of the streetscapes, taking care of the the trees, the lawn, and stuff like that. We don't have them around the police department for the simple reason that there's so many people that come in and don't learn their lesson and come back into the system. We don't want them, walking around the police department and looking at our undercover cars or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But
right.
But yeah, we do utilize them throughout the city, which is a good resource.
Well, we've been talking with Steve Barris, who's running for Volusia County Sheriff. You've got to check out his website, barrisforsheriff2012.com, barrisforsheriff2012.com. And this is a guy that I easily could support if I were living in Volusia County. And one day I hope I am living in Volusia County, so we'll look forward to coming and visiting with you. Got a lot of friends in that county. And just to let people know, it is not easy running a campaign. It takes a lot of work. And if you look at somebody that's running a campaign, don't look at them like they're just some, I got that look all the time. Oh, you're just another politician. Hey, you've got to want to do this for a reason, to make things better. And that's what it's about. It's not about a pay raise or anything else, because it's a lot of work. And I credit anybody that's running for office. Not an easy thing. You deserve a lot of credit for taking this challenge on. And we wish you the best of luck, Steve. Thanks for joining
us.
Thank
you very much. Enjoyed it.
And we will. I'll email you a link with the iTunes. This thing gets syndicated with iTunes. People can download it, and also can stream it off our website in the future as well. So I'll send you a couple of those links, and then I'll give you. I'll just ask you in the email if there's a time you want to chat a little bit about running a campaign. I learned the hard way, and that's what happens. Your first campaign is always the toughest because there's a lot of things you just don't know. So I got a few tips that I think just might help you out. But in any case, thanks for joining us tonight. Any last words for the folks listening tonight?
Well, first off, I want to thank you very much for letting me be on your show. I really enjoyed it. I would say that if anyone out there has any questions for me, they could email me. On my business card, my cell phone number is 386-547-1178. It's on 24/7. It's been on 24/7 for the last 6 years as a deputy chief. So if you want to call and chat, that's fine. I'd enjoy it. And I just want to thank you again for having me. It's been great. I mean, I really enjoy this kind of stuff.
All right, Steve. Thanks. Appreciate it. And we'll be in touch. We'll follow along with the campaign and see how it goes, and wish you the best of luck.
Great. Thank you very much, Commander. And Paula, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right.
Y'all have a good night. And if I don't talk to you, have a good holiday.
Yes, Merry Christmas. Thanks.
Thank you. Merry Christmas to you, too. Bye-bye.
All right, Paul. That was fun. We like having candidates on here, but it's not often that we get to have a candidate that's running for like this kind of an office, law enforcement. That's always a fun thing to do. We had Nina Yvonne on last week, who's an upcoming rising pop star, which that had nothing to do with politics whatsoever. And of course, this really wasn't that political. Running for a judgeship or a sheriff, that's not really political. But they really can make a difference in your county and township, et cetera. So it's important for people to get involved at the local level, as well as paying attention to the presidential race and on and on. So in any case, that's fun. All right, Paula. Well, let's finish this up with our tribute to liberal false choices. And tonight's liberal false choice is courtesy of Marco Rubio, senator for the great state of Florida. So let's see what, and then we'll get to Debbie, what's her next lie, Schultz's most recent lie. Let me pull up this article that came out in Newsmax. Let's see, what was the date? It was back in November. But here's what the gist of it, the title is, Marco Rubio, Obama presents Americans with a false choice between Washington and Wall Street. In other words, you've got to choose. Do you want government or do you want Wall Street? And Wall Street's got a bad connotation now with some of the meltdowns and financial crisis, et cetera. These are in Marco's words. Own words. He says, the most prevalent false choice in modern American politics is the idea that there are only two ways forward. We can either rely on big government or we can rely on big business. And there you go. And that's the false choice that the president presents all the time. So in a tribute to liberals' false choices and, of course, our president, here is my conservative false choice of the day. There are two roads ahead, Paula, and it's about choosing what is best for the American people. One, abolishing our Constitution and all liberty and freedom, or following our Constitution and reigning in big tyrannical government. There you have it. There's only two choices. That's it. It's one or the other. There's nothing in between. So there's our liberal false choice of the day tribute. Did you like that?
Good.
I worked all day on that one. It's so hard. It's so hard coming up with false choices to counter the liberal false choices. But, you know, we could run ads. I mean, you know, if I were president of the United States, I'd stand up there and say just that, you know. Let's say I was the next president of the United States, and I'd say, you know, in the spirit of my predecessor, we only have two choices: abolish the Constitution and your liberty and freedom, or following it and reining in the size and tyranny of our federal government. So, okay, now let's move on to our favorite fibber, and that is going to be Debbie, what's her next slide, Schultz? Now, on Fox News, and again, I played this because I just wanted to hear it for myself, but she basically said that unemployment has not gone up under Barack Obama. Can you believe that?
What is she smoking?
Has not gone up under – I know. What drugs is she taking?
I want some.
I mean, the same drugs that our president's taking. But this is on the St. Petersburg Time/Miami Herald, PolitiFact, Florida. PolitiFact Check, Florida. I've not been to this site before.
You know, but do they realize that because of that the way she thinks and a lot of people think like that is because everybody that's not on unemployment anymore staggers the numbers?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's the way the numbers are calculated is very misleading, et cetera. But this was brought up initially by my good friend Ed Morrissey at hotair.com. He does some great work there, hotair.com. If you've never been to that site, it's really worth checking out. But he was on Fox News. She was on Fox News, and this was December 12th, so this was back on Monday. And Gretchen Carlson, is that her last name? Yeah, Gretchen Carlson. I watch her all the time on, you know, Fox and Friends in the Morning. And she kept pressing Debbie about unemployment. And finally, Debbie just simply said, I'm going to read it to you. She says, Carlson says, unemployment has gone up precipitously since Obama took office. And what's her next lie? Schultz said, that is simply not true. Carlson says, yes, it is. Wasserman Schultz says, in fact, unemployment has now dropped below 9%. It's continuing to drop. Wait a minute. How does she know it's continuing to drop? Is she predicting what it's going to be next month and the month after? Somehow she's got a crystal ball and she knows this? She's not very bright. There's no way she can possibly know this stuff. But anyways, it's continuing to drop. We're going to see it go back up, I can tell you right now, because the numbers are altered in that we've got hundreds of thousands of people that aren't even looking for work anymore. So they're not only unemployed, but they're not getting unemployment anymore.
Right.
Because they're not getting unemployment, suddenly the numbers, the percentage has dropped, but the actual number of Americans that are unemployed has gone up. So she's really being quite deceptive here about this. Let's see. In fact, unemployment has now dropped below 9%, she says, and it's continuing to drop. Like she can even – how does she know it's continuing to drop? Where does she get that from? Nobody said that because nobody can say that's continuing to drop. So, oh, Debbie, it's going to be 8.4% next month. You know that? No, she doesn't know that. She's lying. Okay, so Carlson. But it's higher than when they promised that the stimulus would lower it to 8%. And Debbie says, see, that narrative doesn't work anymore for you. And she calls like, it's not my narrative, it's the facts. The narrative. You know, now the facts are suddenly a narrative, like we're somehow lying, and the facts are somehow lying. And Debbie says, you just said that the unemployment rate has been going up since he took office, and it hasn't. Wait a minute. When he took office – in January of 2009, unemployment was at 7.8%. It peaked out at 9.9%. almost broke 10%. I mean, it was like 9.99999%, almost at 10%. 10% is a bad, bad number. It just has a very bad sound to it when you're talking unemployment. Carlson says, is unemployment higher now than when President Obama took office? And what's her next lie? Says, what's happened since President Obama took office? And then she cut her off. Is unemployment higher than when he took office? And here's her final statement. Unemployment is nearing right now around where it was when President Obama took office, and it's dropping. You just said that it's been increasing, and that's not true. She's deluded. I mean, she is in la-la land. That's an outright lie. She just absolutely lied on national TV and on Fox News.
Well,
so,
I think the majority of them are just to tell people something to sway the decision. And if, you know, the citizens of the country in general, you know, use some common sense and go, well, no, that's not right. It is the fact that, you know, people have dropped off from unemployment, so that's going to sway the numbers instead of listening to people like her.
Yep. Well, this article is saying that in October 2009, it did hit 10.1%. So, I mean, from 7.8 up to 10.1%, that's rising unemployment. It may currently have dropped, according to the official numbers, but it's up higher than he promised. Number one, he said, give me the stimulus bill, unemployment will not go above 8%. So he proved his incompetence at being able to predict what the economy was going to do. Now what he does is he goes around the country saying, oh, it was worse than we thought. Oh, yeah, I was handed this. It's not my fault. It was worse than we thought. But we've kept it from getting really bad.
What's that soundbite you played? Shovel ready isn't exactly shovel ready.
Yeah, we play that all the time. It's not exactly shovel ready, and then everybody chuckles. Ha ha ha! It's a big joke to them. He doesn't care. Today Rush Limbaugh was saying he's gotten exactly what he wanted: higher unemployment, the dollar value down, and you know, the other things that people are unhappy about. He's gotten what he wanted. He wanted this stuff to happen because this is his goal: to really essentially destroy our economy so that we can have this, I'll use Debbie's term, narrative that you've got to rely on government. The free enterprise doesn't work. So there's that false choice that we talked about on the last show. Free enterprise doesn't work. Government works. You, the people, are lazy. You don't work. Government works. So we're going to rein you all into the government system and make you all a part of the government. Grow government as big as we can, and go after those evil, evil job creators, the wealthy. Uh-huh. And the wealthy that maybe – go ahead.
It doesn't look good in the textbooks when, you know, our grandchildren are looking at the textbooks and going, well, Barack Obama, first black president, da-da-da. And then you go, what did he do? Well, what?
Yeah.
They can't say what he did, you know?
There's a really good article that came out today in American Thinker, and it's called Obama's Job Description. Now, we've done a show before where I've gone through the Constitution and explained what the president's job description is and his authority, which is minimalistic, very, very small. But Cindy Simpson wrote this article, came out today in Obama's Job Description. It's really comparing what he himself believes and has said in his own statements, in his own words, his job description is, versus what the Constitution says. And they're two different things, completely different things. He was interviewed, Obama revealed his own view of his job early in an interview with, it was on 60 Minutes with Steve Proft. And Steve asked him, isn't your job as president to find solutions to these problems, to get results and to figure a way to get it done? Actually, that's not his job description whatsoever. Read the Constitution. That's not his job. But here is what Obama answered. He said, it's my job to put forward a vision of the country that benefits the vast majority of Americans. It's my job to make sure that my party is behind those initiatives, even if sometimes it's breaking some china and going against some of the dogma of our party in the past. In other words, he doesn't really like the true Democrat Party. He wants to turn it into the Socialist Party. And it's my job to rally the American people around that vision. Yeah, that's exactly it. It's his job to rally the American people around his vision of a new utopian America that can never, ever exist because he's such a great communicator. Now, let's see what Cindy has to say. Her comments on this are quite accurate. Prior to hearing those remarks, many of us had been operating under the naive assumption that the primary responsibility of the president was, as sworn in the oath of office, to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution. We assumed that a president's vision would harmonize with our founding documents, that the president would provide leadership to more than his own party. Remember, he said to his party, to make sure that his party. How about like all of Congress and the Senate? How about the government? How about the people? But anyways, his party. See, it's all about him and his party and how he wants to shape his party into the new socialist party. Let's see. And that his initiatives would not benefit the vast majority to the detriment of the freedom and liberty of all. In other words, that's what socialism does. We're going to go after the benefit to the vast majority of folks. But in order to do that, we've got to take your freedom and liberty to ensure that we can do that properly. That's how socialism and communism work. Let me scale on down here a little bit. And she says, imagine if a corporate executive said something like this, and this, again, is in Obama speaking. When I came into office in 2008, it was my firm belief that such an important moment in our history, there was no reason why Democrats and Republicans couldn't put some of the old ideological baggage aside. And I think Republicans made a different calculation, which was, you know what? We really screwed up the economy. See, it's always somebody else's job. Obama seems unpopular. Our best bet is to stand on the sidelines because we think the economy is going to get worse, and at some point we'll just blame him. Well, listen, in his first 2 years, he owned the Congress and the Senate. So the Republicans could have stepped over and sat on the sideline and done absolutely nothing. And that would not have stopped him from making changes and improving our economy and improving the country. They had nothing to do with it. They had no say in it. Okay, but now to her points. Most CEOs would never dare to make such whiny sentiments public. And we wonder what exactly Obama meant by the phrase, at such an important moment in our history. Surely he referred to our economic troubles and not his own election victory. But then, when Obama described to Croft in this interview his view of Wall Street from, quote, 40,000 feet above it, when he gets in an airplane and flies up above New York City and looks down and says, ha, I can see everything going on, it was difficult not to recall Newsweek's Evans Thomas vision of Obama standing above the world as a sort of god, or the time that Obama, upon accepting his party's nomination in 2008, declared, this was the moment when the rise of the oceans began to slow and our planet began to heal. Yeah, his winning of the nomination is when the planet began to heal. What a megalomaniac and a deluded one at that. Holy shamoly. He has since informed us, however, that his presidential powers do not include the control of the weather. Yeah, he controls everything pretty much, just not the weather. And that was the one thing that the communists used to say. That was a communist sort of a president of the Czech Republic that was a saying among the communists, you know, if only we controlled the sun and the weather, meaning they controlled everything in their communist Soviet state, but they couldn't control the weather. And, of course, now we're getting on to another thing here, that global warming is the way to now actually control the weather. You're not actually controlling it. You're just making it seem that you can control the weather, and it's the new way to actually control the people. But that's a whole other thing. But so this guy is digging back into communist propaganda, our president, when he talks about, there's one thing I can't control, it's the weather, but everything else, yeah, I can. And in his speech describing the presidency, Representative Mike Pence wisely noted, we as a people are not to be ruled and not to be commanded. The president should never forget this, that he has not risen above us, but is merely one of us, chosen by ballot, dismissed after his term, tasked not to transform and work his will upon us, but to bear the weight of decision and to carry out faithfully the design laid down in the Constitution. This is a president that can't stand the Constitution. He's made that clear in the past. We've done shows on it. I'm not going to go into that now. And so Cindy continues on. She says, it goes without saying that the commander-in-chief should be loyal to our founding ideals, bows and apologies to the rest of the world, and assertions that the American experiment of you're on your own your experiment of A, you're on your own economy, hasn't worked, and it's not going to work in the future, display either a radically different view of our nation's history or the desire to dramatically remake its character going forward. Another president's remarks have lately been making their way around the blogosphere, and this is James Garfield, written over 100 years ago. Now, more than ever before, the people are responsible for the character of their Congress. If that body be ignorant, reckless, and corrupt, it is because the people tolerate ignorance, recklessness, and corruption. If it be intelligent, brave, and pure, it is because the people demand those high qualities. And that's where we need to start going with our elected officials. It's not about who's going to bring home the bacon to your district and your state. It's about who has true integrity and integrity in light of following the Constitution. So great article by Cindy Simpson, and it goes on, and it talks about more of this, but the bottom line is we've got a president that's completely out of touch with the history of our nation and the founding of our nation and its Constitution and his role as outlined in the Constitution. I'll just read one more little thing. Another president from the past viewed his role quite differently, Grover Cleveland, who believed in keeping government expenditure at the minimum required to carry out essential constitutional functions. I know of another president that felt that way, and that was Thomas Jefferson. And after his first term, we had no national debt. He completely wiped out the debt that was left over from the Revolutionary War and building up our nation into a constitutional republic. Cleveland stated this, I can find no warrant for such an appropriation in the Constitution. Oh, let me back up. He famously vetoed the Texas Seed Bill legislation that proposed to spend $10,000 on assistance to drought-suffering Texas farmers. Sounds good, right? Oh, let's help out the Texas farmers. Hey, I'm all for that. I can find no warrant for such an appropriation of the Constitution, and I do not believe that the power and duty of the general government ought to be extended to the relief of individual suffering, which is in no manner properly related to the public service or benefit. A prevalent tendency to disregard the limited mission of this power and duty should, I think, be steadily resisted to the end that the lesson should be constantly enforced, that the people support the government, the government should not support the people. We have a president that is going to be making a case as he campaigns that it's up to government to support the people, and I need more of your money to do it, and I need more authority and more power. When we visited this last summer, Washington, D.C., for a few days and wandered all over the mall and looked at all the different monuments, and I could look this up right now. I'm just not going to do it. I'm going to try and do this from memory. Up at the very top of the Jefferson Monument on the inside there, inscribed across the wall, is Jefferson, a quote from Jefferson, who said, I have knelt at the altar of God and sworn eternal hatred against every form of tyranny over the mind of man. And this is what he was talking about, a government that is going to control the mind of man, and we've got a government that is passing laws that say, we are going to decide what's best for you. And you have no choice in it, or we will penalize you. So what a change our nation, a turn and change our nation has taken in the last 100 years, and it's built to this boiling point. We have got to get back to the roadmap for success, which is the Constitution. And that's why I made tonight my tribute to liberal false choices, the one about abolishing our Constitution, liberty, and freedom. That's one choice. That's the liberal choice. And the conservative, which really, I don't know that this is actually a false choice. I think it's a real choice. But liberals go, oh, we've never campaigned on that. We've never said that. But what I'm saying is the other choice is following the Constitution and reining in a bloated, tyrannical government. So there we have it. Great article, American Thinker. Go look that up, and you can share that with your libtard friends and relatives over the holiday season. All right. Well, we've had a long session tonight, a good session. We'll be back next week on Wednesday and Thursday again. This is our special December scheduling, Wednesdays and Thursdays. And Paula, I'm going to be off flying the friendly skies tomorrow. I've got a really tough duty. I've got to fly to Bermuda.
Oh, darn goodness. My
heart bleeds.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to do it.
Yeah.
one leg to Bermuda and then one leg back the next day back to sunny. And I am. I didn't want to say it because, you know, you mentioned it was cold up there, but I have to say it. I'm sitting on the patio here. It's 74 degrees out. The crickets are chirping, and it's a very nice night out. And I look forward to getting back here for another nice weekend. And wishing all of you happy holidays. If you're going to be traveling, be sure and fly American Airlines. Even though we're in bankruptcy, we are still flying. I shouldn't say that. I'd get in trouble. But, yeah, nothing's going to change. Nothing is going to change. It didn't change for any of the other carriers that did it. We're going to come out stronger on the other end. But, yeah, try and fly on American Airlines. We can use your patronage, and you might get a chance to fly with me. So,
hey, there you go.
Anyway. All right, I'll give you the last word, Paula.
All right, thank you. Shout out to our troops overseas. If you're all not home, you're going to come home by year's end, from what I understand. Your families love and miss you very much, and hopefully you're on your last leg of your travels. Have a safe and happy holiday.
Yeah, welcome home, troops and families of the troops. Glad to have them all back. Glad that chapter's over. We'll see you next week. Have a great weekend, and thanks for joining us. Good night, Paula.
Good night, Tom.
Listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.